Well, hello out there, and welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. Well, I got a voice in here, and I got a guest. Everybody knows him, Sheriff Nick Manns. Welcome, Sheriff.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah. I contacted you not long ago. Of course, I know you got a busy schedule. I got to get you back in. You know, I mean, yeah. we got to tell a couple stories.
It's an honor to be here. I like to tell stories. That's yes. For sure.
Well, one thing I wanted to do, I just wanted to, in a non campaigning climate, you know, just get you in and kind of share your life experiences a little bit with our listeners, because you're a pretty interesting guy.
Some people might differ with you on that, but thank you. I think that's a compliment.
You're a humble guy.
Sometimes.
And of course, everybody knows you grew up here in Jersey.
Yes, sir.
And married your high school sweetheart?
No. We met actually after I was out of college and on the career. She's from Carrollton. We weren't far away, but I never knew her till.
That's right. And your first date was at
your Lorton place.
Hotel. That's right. I do remember
well,
that.
Well, it wasn't Lorton's Hotel, but it was the bar.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Right.
Just to clarify.
Well, yeah, there was a bar in the hotel.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. How are things going, this sheriff? How long have you been doing this now? 2 years?
2 years. It'll be 2 years December 2nd. So I couldn't ask for better. You know, this is a shop that runs itself, really.
We'll just touch on some things that you didn't expect.
The maintenance of our courthouse, our beloved courthouse, was something I didn't expect the amount of work that takes.
You didn't know you were going to get that job.
By Illinois law, the sheriffs in the state of Illinois are responsible for the maintenance of the courthouse. So because of that, you know, I'm the guy and didn't know that.
You didn't know you're going to be a general
using
contractor.
Using some of my handyman skills, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Now, you're a very community-oriented guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And probably naturally that came, but also in all the different positions you've had over the years.
Yeah, for sure. I think law enforcement has molded me into that person over the course of my career, because it's an effective way to solve cases, to be honest with you. So yeah. I've learned that.
Yeah. And another thing, I was just reading a little bit about, you spoke to the high school kids.
Yeah.
Couple weeks ago, and work ethics was a big deal for you.
Yeah.
Can you just touch on that a little bit, what it meant to you, or when did you even realize how work ethics were so important?
Well, it's like I told the kids at the high school, I love talking to those kids, by the way, but I started, you know, I kind of grew up on a farm 10 miles east of town. We farmed. So that's work is part of your life, as you know.
Yeah.
You grew up that way too. And then when I got into high school, I got a car and I wanted to put gas in that thing. Farming wasn't lucrative then, so I started working for another farmer on top of that. And I think early on, Chris, I learned that hard work was first the only way you got the job done in a timely period. It's what farmers expected, because our farmers are hard workers.
Yes, they are.
But then when I started applying for jobs outside of, you know, the farm field, as I got older, when they would call my references, they would ask, describe Nick Manns to us, and the most would say he's a really hard worker. And that's where I started to learn, you know, that's what sets you apart. I was never the smartest guy in the room. I was never the most talented in my profession, but I believed I could outwork anybody because I was taught that.
You'd practiced up.
I practiced up. So, you know, especially in this day and age, Chris, kids, this new generation, there are a lot that just don't want to put in the work. And so if you're willing to put in the work as a young person today, you will excel and exceed your peers.
You know,
for sure.
Things have changed. I mean, I'm a little older than you, for sure. But back in the day, you know, the father went to work. The mom, she stayed home, raised the kids, took care of the house.
And worked harder, I might add.
Yeah, worked harder. Then the kids were at home and they were helping with the house or doing chores. Everybody, you know, worked for the household.
Yes.
And then it came to the point where, you know, then both parents are going to work, you know, and then the kids are kind of on their own or somebody's babysitting them and they're, you know, going to sporting events and all this, and
right,
work, just plain old work, has kind of been shoved to the wayside.
Well, in my generation of parents, yours included, we wanted our kids to have better than us. You know, we work was something we did, and I think part of our as parenting, as we got more fluent and the country got more prosperous, we took care of our kids and didn't make them work as hard as we did.
Yeah.
And so I think over time, hard work has been lost as a value. And I think if you're willing to do hard work, I told the kids at the high school, all of us have it in our genetics in this county, because somewhere in our past, or whether it be our parents or our grandparents, worked their tails off to make a better life.
Yeah.
And so it's there if you can find it and you can become that hard worker. I found that I could really do better than most of my peers around me. At least in the law enforcement field, my bosses realize, hey, this guy's willing to do whatever it takes to get the job done.
Okay. And that served me well. Let's go over your career a little bit.
Yeah.
Out of college, where'd you go?
Out of college, my first job was as a deputy U.S. Marshal in East St. Louis. So I applied with a lot of law enforcement agencies. I was hired by them first, and I went to the academy, finished, and was assigned to East St. Louis.
How was that?
Well, you know, East St. Louis is a lot different than Jersey County.
Yeah.
So it was a big eye-opener for me, but I loved it. It was exciting.
What was the biggest eye-opener?
Well, culturally, it's a lot different. First of all, I'm going from a 98% white community to a 98% black community.
Yes.
And working in that. And so I'll tell you why it was an eye-opener is because once I got there and started to work with and become friends with the people of East St. Louis and the police officers of East St. Louis, I realized, well, there's not really any difference between
no.
us.
No. You know,
they want the same things we want. They want a safe community. They want a good job. And they want their kids to have better.
Sure.
And so that was a good eye-opener because I just, you know, my yeah. experience with East St. Louis was what I saw on TV, on the news, and typically that's bad news.
Yeah. So, you know, when I went to college, I grew up in Calhoun.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I never knew any black people.
Yes.
There was no black. I never ran into black
right.
people. Didn't have any. Nothing.
Right.
My first roommate in college was a black kid from the South Side of Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, and he was 2 years ahead of me, and we got to be close friends. And we were fast friends.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. had a lot in common. You know. And,
yeah.
And I knew all his buddies. He knew all mine. And yeah. There's really not a lot.
I was a little bit blessed because in my high school class, I had a friend, and I'm going to mention his name, Ben Golly, who happened to live close to us, who rode my bus. We were dear friends. He's one of the best men I've known, you know, just a tremendous entrepreneur, done tons for our community, for the Alton community. He's Ben's beloved throughout our class. So I already knew a little bit, but working in East St. Louis, where it's majority black community, was really good for me. I mean, yeah. it set me in the right direction.
Sure. So then you got in the FBI, right?
Yeah.
Now, what was the FBI like? I mean, I hear things about the FBI now, you know, like maybe some negative things about the FBI,
sure. mm-hmm.
but give me your spec.
Yeah. You know what you hear now, I hate it for the FBI. And to be honest with you, there's good and bad in every organization, but the majority of what you're hearing today is based on politics, whether it be on the right or the left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone's a critic of the FBI. The FBI, I think, is used to that, and we should be able to sustain it. But
did politics come up when you
never,
were working?
Never.
Never.
In fact, a huge reason I ran as an independent was because I firmly believed, and the FBI taught me this, that policemen should not be political, no more than military officers should be political. And so that really pushed me to run independent, even though it maybe made it a little bit more of an uphill battle for me. But we were taught you're to be a professional, that you're not to let politics enter into it. Now, what you see today is some of our agents and or mainly those in Washington, D.C., who have kind of got sucked into that political world. And I hate it for the FBI. But 99.9%, I'll venture to say, of FBI agents think like I do and were taught like I am, that you're to be a professional and you're to professionally look at these cases and you're to be fair. And, you know, I kind of pride myself on that, and that's how I want the sheriff's office to be too.
Talk about Oklahoma City.
So my first assignment out of the FBI Academy was Oklahoma City. I went there in 1996, early 96. The Oklahoma City bombing was in April of 95. So when I got to Oklahoma City, they were still working on the investigation. The Murr building, what was left of it, was still standing there. And so what a blessing for me. I did very minor things in that case, but I worked with some of the best agents in the country because they were in Oklahoma City doing that case. And I learned a lot. And I want to say that the reason I came to the FBI in the first place, Chris, was because we had an agent here, Dale Schuler, who lived in Elsa, whose daughter went to high school with me. And Dale knew I was a Jersey County boy, and he lived in Jersey County, and he pushed me to go into the FBI. He's very dear to me. He's one of my mentors. And he really, you know, he's the one that pulled me into this organization.
Okay.
And a great man, great agent. And so went to Oklahoma City and got to be around some of the best, and then kind of, you know, started working my own thing. And I stayed there for about 6 years.
Tell us a little bit. I know you, right after that, you went to an Indian reservation.
So I volunteered after about 6 years. 9/11 happened, and then we had quite a bit to do with 9/11. The FBI did, as you know. And then I wanted to work homicides, really is what I was interested in. I had worked a lot, almost all my career in Oklahoma City was working drug cases, and I worked a lot of drug cases as a deputy in East St. Louis. So I wanted to work homicides, and in the FBI, the place where you work homicides is called Indian Country. So it's on Indian reservations because that's federal land, and so FBI agents work homicides in Indian Country. They work what's called the major crimes, which is any serious violent crime. So I volunteered to go to the Navajo Indian Reservation, which is our biggest in the country and had the most homicides. And I went there in 2002.
Okay, one sec. If you're joining us, I have Sheriff Nick Manns with us, Sheriff of Jersey County. We're talking a little bit about his history. Okay, now, why were there so many homicides on the reservations, or what was the story?
Well, Indian reservations are not like our inner cities, you know, and some of our places in our country where there is crime problems. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with poverty and disadvantaged people and underserved people. So Indian reservations are similar to that, and there's a fairly high violent crime rate. So on the Navajo Indian Reservation at the time, because it was 250,000 Navajos and 25,000 square miles, you're just naturally going to have a fair amount of violent crime. And so for me,
why do you say that?
Well, because it's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bigger than the state of Connecticut, for instance.
And there's just not much law enforcement?
Well, it's spread out.
Yeah.
It's really spread out over across the 25,000 square miles. But also, in my experience, a lot of times when you have poverty, it sometimes goes hand in hand with crime. You know?
Uh-huh.
And they're underserved from a police perspective. And that's kind of the truth. What I found out there too. But what I will tell you is this, when I got there, it was the most amazing experience of my life and really of my family's life as well, because
your family went with you?
Yeah, you know, it was a 5-year assignment. So
I mean,
yeah.
But mm-hmm. So you lived on the reservation?
Well, you're not allowed to live on the reservation if you're non-Navajo unless you're married to a Navajo. But we lived in Gallup, New Mexico, which is next to the reservation. So the reservation was a mile from my house.
Okay.
And so we live there, and the FBI has a large office in Gallup, New Mexico, and where agents serve both so the Navajo Reservation covers New Mexico, Arizona, portions of Utah, and portions of Colorado.
Well, go ahead and finish what you're saying about Navajo Reservation, how much you liked it.
Yeah, so, you know, you go there. I really went there because I wanted to work that type of crime, and I was very interested in working violent crime. And so just think about this. If in the big cities, like let's say St. Louis City, when a homicide happens, the St. Louis Police Department works it. My son's an Oklahoma City police officer, there the Oklahoma City police work it. Well, on Indian Reservation, the FBI works the homicides.
They don't have policemen?
It's federal land. They have policemen. But the way the federal law is set up, because it's federal land, the Navajo police in conjunction with the FBI are responsible, have jurisdiction there. And so they work those particular cases.
So like you were saying, you're working homicides all the time.
Yeah, I was like a detective on the Navajo reservation. Now, we work closely with Navajo police. They have a role too. But the tribe itself, the tribal courts, can only enforce misdemeanors. So the serious felony crimes are federal crimes that go to federal court.
Ah, okay.
So it's a jurisdictional thing. Tribes are sovereign nations. The Navajo Nation was a sovereign nation. They had their own government and their own setup, and it was fascinating.
It was.
It's just really neat.
Yeah. Like any big murders that you solved?
Yeah, there's a lot of murders that we solved. You know, I've worked, there were some brutal murders on the reservation. We had some beheadings. We had some pretty serious sexual assault that turned into murders. We had several kidnappings that turned into murders. There's some violent crime there, for sure. Like everywhere. Like everywhere in the country. I don't want to paint it any different than what it is. I'll tell you, Chris, some of the most beautiful country I've ever been to, some of the strongest and most amazing people I've ever seen. If you haven't been to an Indian reservation in our country, you're missing out.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's amazing. They're amazing.
And then you're on back to East St. Louis.
Yeah, so I did 5 years there, and because it was a hardship post for the FBI, after 5 years, they would send you anywhere you wanted to go, and I wanted to come home. My wife, Carrollton girl, wanted to come home, and, you know, our kids were that age. By that time, our kids were 10, 11, and so we brought them back here.
Okay. What'd you work at?
I went to the Fairview Heights office of the FBI, but I was assigned back to East St. Louis, and I worked gang cases, drug cases, and violent crime cases.
Again?
Pretty much, until the end of my career in 2016, my FBI career.
So the gang cases, what was that like working those gangs?
Yeah, you know, one of the things about East St. Louis is phenomenal people. Very strong, resilient people, but they have some serious problems with young people right now, especially that are just violent. And they have these gangs, these basically neighborhood-based gangs, kind of, you know, they run the show down there, and they need police for that purpose. And so gang cases there are a lot of violence, a lot of shooting back and forth, as in a lot of our inner cities right now. It's really a big problem.
Is it ever curtailed at all, or is it always going up, or is it state level, or what's the situation?
Well, you know, it depends on what survey you read and what statistics are out there. You know, in my experience in East St. Louis, it has stayed steady, or maybe dropped at times. I know I ran a unit for the state police there, and the homicide rate dropped maybe by 20% while we were there because we policed heavily. It's a complicated problem, though. They don't really have enough police to police it. City of East St. Louis, when I started there as a marshal in 1991, was 55,000 people. Now there's about 26,000 people. When I started in 1991, there were 100 policemen with the East St. Louis Police Department. Now there's about 25. And that's a problem.
If I got to go to East St. Louis for whatever reason,
yes.
Any suggestions?
Well, go in the day and know where you're going. You know, again, I don't want to disparage the city because some of my best friends in the world are in that city and have served that city.
I'm just saying some precautions, some things to think about. You know, is there anything?
Yeah, don't go at night. Don't go into East St. Louis if you don't know where you're at or where you're going, you know. But the best thing really is,
I mean, what if I get lost in East St. Louis? What
well,
do you
say? Yeah, you better get on your phone and call and get somebody to come find you and help you. And the police will come right away, of course, to find you. But East St. Louis is 98 blocks. It's a beautiful city in so many ways, but it's just, it's like any place that has a high crime problem. You better be careful, you know, when you're there. Again, I'm careful because I love the people and such good, strong people. And what I learned there and what I brought to the Jerseyville Sheriff's Office is that I learned when the police and the community have a good relationship, we can do anything together. You know, if we don't have that relationship and there's friction, then you're going to have a hard time solving crimes. You're going to have a hard time making it a safe place. And if you can't make it a safe place as a policeman, then your community is not going to trust you. So
what do you encourage your deputies? How do you
talk to people? You know, like as you know, one of my big pushes here is to make the deputies go door to door in the county. And
are they doing that?
They are. Okay. In fact, mostly they've hit most of the doors. Every now and then I'll still get a call. Hey, the deputy, I never met the deputy, and we'll send them out there. But my whole goal was just to get them to talk to people like you and I are talking now. Mm-hmm. Because when you do that, as you know, having years of dealing with the public, you learn something about them. And if you learn something about them and they learn something about you, then there's
a trust. All of a sudden you have a relationship.
You have a relationship.
It might be a small relationship, but it's a relationship.
That's right. Yeah. If the only time a policeman's coming is when 911's called or something bad has happened, you're never going to establish that relationship, right? Because you're trying to deal with what the emergency is. Right. So my goal was to get the deputies there when that wasn't happening, makes them better talkers. Policemen have to be good talkers, right? We have to communicate. And it makes the public see us in a different light. And especially kids, that's huge now because you know how policemen are looked at now, much like the FBI is looked at in a negative light.
I don't know if policemen and deputies in the sheriff's department are looked.
I'm talking nationally.
Yeah,
in the county, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, around here, I think everybody loves our policemen and our deputies.
Thank you. That's a good point. I mean, I couldn't ask for better treatment than we get in this county. I mean, we have people coming daily, bringing us food, taking care of us. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better community. I'm talking from a national perspective. Young kids see that, you know.
Yeah. So then, now we don't have much time left.
Sure.
But then you did a little tour in Iraq.
I did. I volunteered.
A little vacation in Iraq.
Right. You know, I volunteered to go to Iraq in 2009. I had not been in the military. It's sort of one of the regrets of my life that I didn't serve in the military. And my dad was a Vietnam veteran, and, you know, that was a bad experience for our veterans. And so it's just not something he encouraged. So I volunteered to go to Iraq to kind of, we were embedded with the military, and because I felt like our counterterrorism mission was very important, and so I went there. It was a short tour. It was between 4 and 5 month tour, and but it was fascinating. Our military is really impressive.
Cool. Really glad impressive. To hear it.
Yeah.
And then you decided to come back
and
run for sheriff.
Yes, sir.
And you're loving it?
Yeah, you know, I miss some things. I'm not going to lie to you. I miss some of the investigative work I did. The sheriff's more of an administrative job. I do miss that, you know. But I just couldn't ask for a better department, better people, better community to serve in. So I do enjoy it. My wife most times likes to have me home closer. Yes. I'm not in East St. Louis anymore. So, I'm not taking the risk I used to take. And it's good. It's really good. And so far, I can't say a negative thing about it. You know, the politics part of it, when I ran, you know, I didn't really enjoy it, to be honest with you.
I can understand that.
It's just not how I'm made. But now that I'm settled in, pretty good gig.
Yeah. Well, any last words of wisdom that you want to pass on to our listeners and your constituents?
No, I just ask, you know, I'll begin where we started. For young people, I would encourage them to look at this profession, because right now we're really hurting for people that want to do law enforcement. But no matter what profession they pick, I just want to tell you that if you're from Jersey County, you have the ability to outwork any person, any of your peers. You have the ability, if you can find it. And if you do that, you'll see from job to job and from promotion to promotion, that's the thing that sets you apart. Like every boss I've ever had said, damn, you're such a hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm really proud of that, probably prouder than anything I did. And I was taught that by my parents and my grandparents. My brothers are both hard workers. So I would just encourage you to take that through life. If you're from this county, it's in your blood already. It's in your genetics. And
just let it blossom.
Just really, really, it's what can set you apart.
Yeah. And I think one thing is not to look at work as like work is negative. Like it's the word work. But work is fun.
It is.
Work can be fun.
Any job.
Yeah.
I worked for a hog farmer for years. I'm telling you, that's a dirty job, as you well know.
Yeah.
I loved lots of parts of it. I mean, just, you know, the accomplishment. I kind of miss it sometimes because a lot of my job's never done now. There, I could do a job, complete it, and move to another job. So,
Hey, we've ran out of time.
Yes, sir.
I got to close this up. Craig's yelling at me from the other side. He's waving his hands. So we got to end this interview. Thanks so much for coming in.
What a pleasure.
We'll see you out there on the streets.
Thank you all. Thank you, sir.